Welcome to the Breakout Growth Podcast, where Sean Ellis and Ethan Garr interview leaders from the world's fastest growing companies to get to the heart of what's really driving their growth. And now, here are your hosts, Sean Ellis and Ethan Garr.
In this week's episode of the Breakout Growth Podcast, Ethan Garr and I chat with Paul Malicki, founder and CEO of Flapper, Brazil's first on-demand private aviation marketplace. So during the conversation, I mentioned to Paul that a couple of years ago, I was in Sao Paulo heading to do a keynote presentation, and I had spent hours fighting traffic. And I finally get to the venue, and a few minutes later, one of the other speakers, I think the guy right behind me, drops in on a helicopter. And I thought, man, that is so badass. Next time, that's going to be me. So really, that's what Paul and his team are making that a much more affordable reality. Whether you want to go by helicopter or by airplane, they are solving that challenge. And Brazil in particular is one of the top helicopter locations. And I think Sao Paulo, he said, specifically top helicopter cities in the world. So it's not unusual to see something like that. But in the process of building this company and his earlier company, he's has some amazing stories. it's very, very entertaining. So Ethan, what stood out at you from this conversation?
Yeah, I think as long as I live, Sean, I will never forget Paul's story of negotiating a revenue split where the guy on the other side put a gun and a grenade on the table before asking Paul if he and his team had any, you know, wiggle room to in the proposal. I mean,
right. Just to be clear, that's not Brazil for anyone who's scared off from doing business in Brazil. Maybe stuff like that happens, but that story was, I believe, in Southeast Asia.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, we've had some great discussions, Sean, with leaders from all sorts of backgrounds, but we have never had a conversation quite like this.
For sure. You know, Paul's leveraging his experience launching Easy Taxi in developing countries, and he's been able to leverage that experience to really build Brazil's Uber of the skies. And so if anyone's not familiar with Easy Taxi, a really successful competitor to Uber in a lot of countries around the world, I think they've now either merged or changed into Cabify. But that's great experience as one of the guys who helped launch that business. And he's really applying a lot of that learning to this business. And in both, he's had a lot of amazing adventures.
Yeah, it was super fun to dig in with him. And while I think our audience is, as you said, going to find this really entertaining, I think they're also going to get a lot out of the conversation. I mean, he is a serious and scrappy growth guy. And he was able to really quickly identify and capitalize on emerging needs like the air ambulance service during the pandemic to keep his growth on track. So it's a really cool story and a lot of really great growth learnings.
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot to gain here in looking at his persistence in raising money. I mean, that's something that ends up killing a lot of startups. But he's also got really interesting thoughts on team structure and just a bunch of other things. So we've chatted in recent weeks with growth leaders from some of the really big companies like HubSpot and Shopify. But I think even though this is a smaller company, his fast growth is something that we can all learn quite a bit from. So should we get to it?
Yeah, absolutely. It really is a great contrast interview from some of the things we've talked about recently. So, but before we jump in, why don't you tell our audience about this week's sponsor, SAP?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you are listening today, please check out Rise with SAP S/4HANA Cloud. Hypergrowth companies get up and running quickly with this low-cost, easy-to-implement cloud ERP solution. So if you are working to power breakout growth success in your business, please check out sap.com/highgrowth.
Excellent. Happy holidays to all of our listeners, and please share and review our podcast wherever you listen. Thanks a lot. Now let's get to it.
All right, let's do it. Hey, Paul, welcome to the Breakout Growth Podcast.
Hey, Sean. Hi, Ethan. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, and Ethan, welcome as well, my co-host here. Welcome aboard, and this is going to be a fun interview.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do this. I'm such an airplane geek, so when I read about Flapper, I got really excited, and I had to reach out to Paul. So we had a nice conversation a few weeks ago, and you know, when I saw what you're doing, it just seemed really interesting, and didn't disappoint in our original conversation. So I'm excited to share it here with our audience.
Well, perfect. Well, let's go ahead and dive in. So, Paul, maybe you can start by just telling us a bit about what Flapper is and, you know, the problem you initially set out to solve.
Right. So we founded Flapper in 2016 with a vision of turning private aviation into a mainstream travel option. Back in the days, I used to travel a lot with my co-founders, and we saw that you have a country like Brazil with 2,500 airports and just 100 of them connected with commercial aviation. And on the other hand, whenever you tried to charter a jet, it was just so difficult. You know, many of those companies did not have websites, etc. So Flapper really is Brazil's first on-demand private aviation marketplace, already with a vision to expand abroad. We are opening up in Mexico, Colombia, Chile, and Argentina, and probably eventually coming to the US in the coming few years.
Very cool. And is it only airplanes, or do you do helicopters as well?
We do both airplanes and helicopters. Of course, when you think about a volume, airplanes are what corresponds to the majority of my revenues. But it's worth highlighting that Sao Paulo is the world's largest helicopter city, right? So we have around 200 helipads in Sao Paulo. And of course, you know, for a city which has 20 million people and doesn't have access to the sea, many of those wealthy customers would simply book a helicopter for the weekend and go to their houses by the sea.
Yeah, I know last time I was in Sao Paulo, I flew in for a conference and spent probably 2 hours in traffic. And it was kind of a miserable ride from the airport. I know there's an airport in town. Mine was the further out airport. And as soon as I get to my hotel and I'm finally like, okay, I'm here. Time to gear up for a presentation in a few hours. I see a helicopter land at the hotel, and I was looking and thought, that is so badass. I was thinking, one, it would have been amazing to skip the traffic, but two, it would just feel really cool to fly in on a helicopter.
Exactly. And you know, with the current exchange rate, it's actually not that expensive, right? So one of the benefits of using a solution like ours is that eventually, you can choose the most affordable and also safe option for your next flight. And we got quite a lot of those empty leg offers, you know, where you can literally fly private for the price of premium economy tickets. And people love it. They sell like crazy, especially when you launch it on a route like Sao Paulo to Rio de Janeiro, which used to be, you know, many years ago, the world's most flown route, right? So still lots of demand for people traveling between these two huge cities. And yeah, it feels like we are in the right place at the right moment.
Very cool. I know years ago you were at Easy Taxi, which I think is one of the largest urban mobility companies in Latin America. Now you're taking that concept to the skies with Flapper. Can you tell us a little bit about your history and your journey and how you got to where you are today?
Right. So be ready, because these are some crazy stories that I will share. But yeah, so first, Easy Taxi used to be, right, the largest e-hailing platform. We used to compete with Uber. And talking about Uber, you know, back in the days, someone actually wanted to introduce us to Uber. And we looked at the concept, and we were like, that just doesn't make any sense. Why would I need an intro to a company like that, right? And that was someone from Rocket Internet, which is, of course, a huge venture capital firm, trying to make an intro. And look how things change, right? Today, Uber is huge and Easy Taxi. We eventually sold to Cabify in a way to, create a larger conglomerate to compete with the likes of Uber, right? But before Brazil, I was actually living in the Philippines, and that's where I helped start Easy Taxi on a local level. Crazy market, you know, we had situations when we used to go on a meeting with a taxi corporation, and the owner would put a gun and a grenade on the table and ask us whether we are ready to accept the 50-50% deal, or shall we still continue talking about 70-30? So it was a very dangerous sector in a way. And of course, that's the Philippines. But if you think about Latin America, it's not much different, right? So we had situations when we had to, for example, move our office in Colombia because the taxi drivers wanted to literally execute us, right? So very, very obsolete market, very fragmented. And it just makes such a huge difference with such a platform, you know? I remember when we were number one in Colombia as an app, Uber was not even entering Paris, right? So it was also the first international e-hailing company, right? Overall, great experience. We learned a lot because many of the things we did, you were doing it like as the first company ever, right? And I literally made an upgrade, right? Because I went from a taxi to air taxi. And the idea is basically the same, right? We are looking into the, you know, fairly fragmented market, which is not digitized, right? I actually loved when I was in a conference in San Francisco, one of the VCs said that private aviation is the world's only large sector which hasn't been digitized. And that's true. Only in the US and in some cities in Europe, you have digital platforms which help you book a flight, right? So long story short, you know, that was my upgrade from Easy Taxi to Flapper. Back in the days, we were already discussing the sale of a company, and eventually I had to leave. And that's why, you know, we started a company, which, by the way, the idea was of my co-founder, but I was the one who sort of directed it into the right mode. Because you can do so many things, and you can do so many things wrong if you work with aviation. I don't know if you know the saying, but you know what's the best way to become a millionaire? You have to be a billionaire and fund an aviation company, right?
Yeah,
and then you'll be stripped of your capital.
Yeah. So has the model changed since you started it, or was the initial model that you came out of the gate kind of the what worked, and you've just sort of grown it pretty much as is, or did you do a few pivots along the way?
Right. So the main concept was really to offer paper seat flights between the airports, which are not available on commercial aviation, right? What really changed is that we saw a huge demand for charter flights, and we simply decided to focus more on that part of the business. So today we have one route, which we share on a paper seat basis, and we have around 10 routes, which we announce during high season, holidays, and similar events. So you still can buy seats, right? And that's definitely one part of the business which we intend to scale. But more and more, you can simply charter an individual turboprop, jet, or a helicopter. And what happened now with the crisis is that we also started offering cargo flights and ambulance flights, because that just makes so much sense, right? The whole world has changed, and there's a shortage of cargo flights. And of course, ambulance flights are just skyrocketing in terms of the demand.
Right. Well, and the fact that probably a lot less people are traveling. So that pivot, kind of the same way that Uber made the pivot from primarily focusing on moving passengers to the bigger part of, or the bigger growth area of their business over the last year is clearly on food delivery, and who knows what it will be as the world gets back to normal. But that sounds like a short-term pivot that makes a lot of sense. And then in the longer term, the charter and some of the other pieces, sounds like you've been really responsive to the market, which clearly has worked, at least from outside signs.
Right, because you see, in our sector, you have billionaires and millionaires and multimillionaires, and you can offer so many different types of services. You can sell an airplane, which, by the way, also makes sense for us, right? We should enter this business. But you can also sell, just one quota, right? You can do the fractional ownership model, and you can also do membership, and you can also sell seats, and you can charter. So it's sort of like different layers depending on how wealthy you are and how much do you travel, and also what are your preferences in terms of socializing on the same airplane with perhaps 8 people you don't know. So definitely lots of potential demand, and I feel like we are still very early on. If you look at Latin America, it's 1,000 airplanes, and we have right now 1,000 airplanes within the Part 135 operations, right? And we are with 550 on our platform right now. So still quite a lot of work to be done in terms of supply.
And is that really all in the Sao Paulo and Brazil, you know, in your local area in Brazil, or is that has that expanded kind of worldwide? And what made you choose that market?
Right. Well, I think that what really made us choose Brazil is that we were simply here and we saw that there is no competition, because if you look at the US or Europe, the guys are competing big time. There's lots of capital being involved. Now that everybody's going for an IPO. So I feel like, you know, it was the right thing to do. Brazil is the world's second largest private aviation market. Mexico is number 3. Out of 10 largest urban helicopter fleets, 6 are in Latin America. And that includes Sao Paulo, Rio de Janeiro, but also Mexico City or Santiago de Chile. So in terms of market size, it is very interesting as a whole region, you know, and then definitely Brazil and Mexico in the long term would be the most important markets for us. Colombia is quite important as well because it serves as a hub. Funnily enough, you know, you have a country like Mexico where if you look at the tail number of an airplane, it says XA if it's commercial and XB if it's private. But a lot of those commercial airplanes were bought using, you know, subsidies of the government. And you have no idea how many of those are actually charterable, if I may say so, right? So the big job to be done is really to identify those companies which offer their services. So yeah, I would say Brazil and Mexico, then in the long term, definitely the US. It makes sense for us to sort of integrate it into our plans, but it will depend on capital and investors and probably our plans for IPO eventually. So yeah, I'm a bit afraid of entering the US, to be honest. Lots of serious guys with great teams, and we'll see.
Yeah, no, it sounds like even the learning that you've had in terms of where those market opportunities are beyond what your original vision was. Have there been any other like key growth learnings that jump out at you that you've discovered over the last few years?
Oh my God, I think that there's just so many things you can learn. By the end of the day, it's a fair mix of technology, but also your creativity. We've been doing lots of PR, and one great thing about the PR is that it raises your click-through rates on Google. So eventually your marketing becomes cheaper. And whenever you launch a business in a market which is just so, let's say, fragmented and obsolete and new in a way to many people, you need to do a lot of content. So lots of information about the airplane, safety, promotion of, you know, safe flights. All of that has been a part of our strategy. But we've also done, you know, lots of very unique growth hacking techniques. One thing that I really liked in terms of the campaign is that I once asked my colleague from Telefonica, which is the largest operator here. I was like, listen, you probably know who travels between Sao Paulo and Rio because you can get this data from the towers. And he was like, well, we can do it. I said, can you message those people? Technically, we can do it. So we built a campaign where we were targeting people that travel at least twice a month between Sao Paulo and Rio. And we were offering them at that time our service, Sao Paulo, Rio, on a private jet. So fantastic in terms of performance. And a lot of, you know, digital campaigns really focused on Facebook and Google, but with a lot of market intelligence behind it, right? So using custom audiences, targeting people who earn at least $20,000 a month, and so on and so forth. So yeah, that's basically my cup of tea. So I love it. Marketing and growth is the essence for me.
Yeah, that's awesome. And yeah, you mentioned being scared of coming to the U.S. I can say I think will someone put a grenade on the table in the U.S. when trying to work a deal with you. So you have that going for you if you do come into this market. But hey, can you tell us a little bit about, I mean, I think you said you founded the company in 2016. Tell us what growth has looked like and how it's been going, not just, you know, in the beginning, but also through COVID.
Right. So last year we grew our revenues by more than 100%. So we are happy with the results, you know, very difficult time, times for everybody. And, you know, you mentioned that private aviation to some extent can perhaps substitute commercial aviation, but also what we've seen is that those wealthy foreigners, including Americans, where they come to Latin America in, you know, first class flight, they want to travel internally on a private jet. And unfortunately, this market almost disappeared. Talking about last year, I think we've done a decent job. Before, in 2019, we grew 251% in terms of revenues. And to be honest, from the very beginning, what we knew is that this is going to be like a hockey stick, you know, when you have a startup and you reach maturity. So I feel like we are heading towards that moment when the angle is sort of heading into upward direction. And you can see it by the number of clients coming through recommendations, right? The word of mouth is just crazy. I would probably say 90% of my new clients right now is all recommendations. But it took us a while, right? It was very difficult. And, you know, most difficult part was always the funding. I ended up sleeping on a sofa of a friend of mine because I just didn't have any money. So we started offering consulting services with my partner just to sustain the business. So I was an advisor at Nubank. I was an advisor at Farfetch.com before their IPO. And this cash was being used to pay developers and some other costs of ours. And then it took me 228 meetings to raise my seed round. So you can imagine that's just insane. And 530 meetings to raise my Series A. So obviously you need to be very determined and really believe in the business and maybe a bit crazy even, because why would you just do it? But since I was already in it and I liked it, it's a sexy business, right? Then I just went ahead with it.
But I got to imagine with the growth rates that you mentioned you've had over the last couple of years that investors are very interested now. Have you looked at taking on new money? And if you did, what would you do with that money?
Right. So I think that, you know, the cash right now, which we will be using, is mostly, you know, technology and operations, right? So technology is always going to be important. We are hiring 12 developers right now. We just want to develop more platforms, et cetera. In terms of the actual experience with investors recently, yes, it does change once you become sort of a public person and your company appears on all the media, then people start looking after you. And funnily enough, you know, we closed the fastest crowdfunding campaign in the history of Brazil. We raised in 7 days, 2.5 million reais, which is around $500,000, which, by the way, for the local market, that's a lot because, you know, everything is cheaper here. And it was just insane because, you know, you at that moment I realized, gosh, I think I'm creating a nice business because people just know about it, you know. And we did some fantastic growth hacking tactic as well, where basically there is a portal called Administradores, which is like the largest entrepreneurship portal in Brazil. So I talked to the guy. I was like, look, I pay you 10,000 for you to post that you invested in Flapper and you name all the other famous investors that are going to be investing in me. And instead of you taking this money, you're going to also invest in my company. And he agreed. And he posted it. And one of the persons that was mentioned on the press release, she's one of the biggest angel investors in Brazil. So I posted it on LinkedIn and I asked her to comment that she's so happy becoming an investor of Flapper. And it just viralized. You know, I got so many views on this post and people were just trying not to miss the chance. You know, they were like commenting, oh, I also want to become an investor. Oh my God, that girl from Shark Tank is your investor. I also want to become your investor. So yeah, 7 days and it was just crazy. You know, we had a call with the last few investors which were interested in entering the business, and we were like 90% on our crowdfunding. And I was just looking at my screen, I was like, oh my God, it was like 91, 92, 93, 94. And I was like, look, guys, if you want to invest, you have to do it now because by the end of this call, we're going to be at 100%. And we were at 100% by the end of the call. So yeah, you have those nice moments as well, which inspire you a little bit, but overall it's been so difficult, you know, to scale up this business. And I think that only now we see it, like, looking back at the past, how much effort it took.
Yeah. So one thing, as you were talking, just kind of through that full financing journey, it reminded me of my time at LogMeIn, where we also, I think we had 40 VCs give us second meetings and who all ended up saying no after those second meetings. And the good news is, you know, the business sold for $4 billion last year. And the good news is that that even when we did our IPO on NASDAQ, all of these venture capitalists who said no followed our journey. And so it turned out to be a really great way to get to know a lot of venture capitalists and have credibility in the future, because they all had said no. And then they're a lot more interested in what you're doing next. So hopefully now that you went through hundreds of them, you definitely have the relationships to continue to feed the funding if you need it going forward.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not trying to burn bridges as well with those people, even though I'm sometimes just so pissed with them saying no. Gosh, you know, you just need so much patience. I was once entering the meeting with a VC and he sat next to me and he was like, look, I will never put my kid in your airplanes. Convince me. And I was like, well, that's not the best way to start a conversation, but if you want, I'll convince you, right? And I was just, you know, you have to behave, right? So today what I'm doing, I'm making intros for lots of entrepreneurs in Brazil who need VC contacts, because I just feel the pain, right? I know how much effort it takes. And I think that I just became very good at fundraising. It's one thing that, you know, it will be here. It is here to stay, right? This capacity of yours. So overall, we shouldn't be negative about the past. It took a while, but right now it's all good.
Just out of curiosity, you mentioned, you know, that investor saying he never put his kids in one of your planes. Is safety, and is that the big thing that you have to get over in terms of convincing users that, you know, flyers, that this is a great way to travel? Is it getting them to trust that your airplanes are safe?
Absolutely. If you look at how NetJets explains their business, they are very clear that, you know, it's two things. It's safety and availability, right? That's why the wealthiest people want to be NetJets customers. Probably I'm not NetJets yet, right? We also fly turboprops, but definitely we look into safety as one of the most important factors out of around 600 airplanes in Brazil, we only homologated 350. So it's still quite limited in terms of safety standards, right? And you need to take care and you need to really like look into these things, right? And I don't think it will ever change. This joke, what is the safest mode of transportation? So by 2017, commercial aviation became the safest mode of transport. Before, people used to say elevator, because elevator is also a mode of transport, right? But it's not as safe as commercial aviation these days. So what we have to do right now is we have to promote business aviation, because although the safety ratings are not as high as for large commercial flights, it is a very, very safe sector. It's just that you need to really fly with the right people and with the right weather conditions, and not put too much pressure on pilots, and that's the filter we are trying to do.
This week's Breakout Growth Podcast episode is sponsored by SAP. SAP helps businesses increase productivity and achieve real-time transparency with the power and flexibility of RISE with SAP S/4HANA Cloud. If you have ambitious goals and are working to lead markets and industries, then you probably already know how important it is to align with a technology partner who will scale and drive innovation with your business. With Grow by SAP, future industry leaders like yourself don't have to rely on stitched-together solutions that don't talk to each other to manage business finances, operations, and customer relations. Instead, leveraging the flexibility of SAP's cloud-based solution, you can power all these in one place and gain unprecedented insights into the performance of your business from end to end. Whether you're on the brink of or have already achieved breakout growth success, learn more by visiting sap.com/high growth.
Sure. And I think we've seen that. I mean, you think about like the Kobe Bryant story. I think, you know, commercial aviation or private aviation, like there's always that fear, like, is this being managed the way that a commercial aircraft is being managed? But it sounds like that's an important part of what how you communicate with your audience. That sounds like
just to build on that real fast, the Kobe Bryant was what came to my mind as well. Like it's just so newsworthy when aviation goes wrong that you just kind of over index on the accidents when they happen. And so I think that's why there's that perception that it's scary. And then obviously like when someone famous is part of it, which famous high-profile people are the ones who are doing more of the private aviation, then it creates probably even more fear.
It's a lot about the data. It's being polluted by the news. There's a huge difference between commercial flights and private flights. That's number one. So within private aviation, you have a subsector, which is called Part 135. That's way safer than private flights. It depends on the countries and states where you're at. So for example, in Brazil, almost all accidents happen in Amazon, right? Because the runways are not homologated and the government cannot do much about it. And people still need to fly. So, but if you look at the southeast of Brazil, including Sao Paulo and Rio, we almost had never accidents in the last few years. So I agree with you. And I think that, you know, that's a difficult part of the job. You need to really communicate properly and promote private aviation in the right way. Then the customers will come.
Last week there was this 777 here in the US where the engine exploded, and it was so routine for the pilots, you know, it made big news because pieces of the plane fell off and stuff. But the reality is that it was commercial aviation has become so safe and so reliable that even, you know, those are what becomes really noteworthy. But it's not necessarily, these aren't necessarily really huge dangers to the flying public. But, you know, I think that's an interesting challenge that you guys have to overcome. Can you tell us other challenge? You know, you said that it's been really hard, a tough business to scale. Can you tell us about the other challenges and kind of growth challenges you've been facing through this journey?
Right. I think, you know, as in any marketplace model, you really need to look into the supply and you need to have perfect relationship with your supply. In this case, air carriers, right? So it's always been a bit difficult for us to scale up because sometimes they are jealous. Sometimes they feel like we are their competitors, even though we promote, the market. So definitely that is a bit of a challenge. Right now, when we are becoming more of a mainstream, I don't know, I feel like sometimes I worry about my safety as well, because, you know, then if you're becoming a well-known entrepreneur and you live in an emerging country, you know, it's like, I don't want to offend anyone or anything, right? But because by the end of the day, we are here to build businesses. But yeah, like it like sometimes I really feel like something might happen. And I think right now the biggest problem really in the world when it comes to the, you know, building startups is just lack of developers. I mean, with this current exchange rate in Brazil, where Brazilian real was the second or the third worst currency in terms of valuation, right, last year, American companies pay in dollar to the local developers in Brazil, and it's just still cheap for them. But for us, it's just horrendously expensive, right? So I feel like, you know, as of today, that's probably my main problem. But hopefully we'll go over it in the coming few weeks.
So one of the things that jumped out at me that you've said so far was that you've gotten to the point now where the majority of new customers are coming in through word of mouth. Would you say that's, I mean, I guess you've already said it, that that's the most important channel. And then I guess more importantly, how do you actually feed that word of mouth? Is there a way that you can accelerate that, incentivize people to do it, or it just happens naturally and there's not much you can do with that?
Well, of course, we are trying to help this word of mouth as well by running Google ads, doing, you know, lots of organic blog posts, etc., just so people really find the content. Yeah, like I feel like it's always difficult to say. When we measured at Easy Taxi, where the customers came from, like asking them, how did you get to know about Easy Taxi? People just prefer to say friends and family. Even though, you know, there is some underlying sort of factor and I don't know, maybe they were watching a TV and they just saw you and they can't recall. So we started measuring then both the attribution as well as awareness. So I wanted to clearly understand, where do people get to know about Flapper Easy Taxi at that time, right? For the first time, and where do they actually convert? So everything was tracked. And we are trying to repeat it right now with Flapper. But I think that the difference is that it is just one of those, you know, businesses where you look for, you know, answers before you start using a service. And someone saw a friend posting a picture of flying with Flapper, he's probably going to ask and then get a response. So no silver bullets, really. I mean, I feel like, you know, marketing has to be multi-level. We do things like executive secretary associations. We do some events. We do big media, small media, but always looking at the target audience being wealthy customers and trying to find where those users congregate. And from there on, it's all about the execution, because if you provide a good service, if you have a good NPS, the customers will come.
Yeah, I think Sean and I are big proponents that it's about finding product market fit and execution and marrying those things together really well. When it comes to execution, can you tell us a little bit about how you've organized for growth, how you've organized your teams, whether it's product growth and marketing?
Right. I'm a little bit biased because, you know, I'm a marketeer by profession, right? So when we started the business for the first 2 years, I didn't have anyone doing marketing for us. I was doing everything. And, you know, once you set up a decent Google Ads campaign, it's there. Once you set up a decent user acquisition campaign, on Facebook, where, for example, I was geofencing all the airports, right, trying to target folks that are at the airports, then it's there. So it's just a matter of scaling it up. The first 2 years were a little bit difficult because I had to aggregate that 1,000 customers to create my first lookalike audiences, right? And some of those customers don't want to share their email because of privacy reasons. And, you know, again, private aviation is like a separate ecosystem. Right now, I have one person working with me directly in Brazil on marketing. We have one intern, and that's it. The rest is basically using what we know works. We have a PR agency, which, by the way, for a long, long time, I was also doing everything on my own, because as a CMO at Easy Taxi, I just gained all those contacts with the journalists. But yeah, there's a moment when you just can't do everything on your own, and execution just takes so much time, especially content. And we do quite a lot of collaboration with freelancers. So design, we have three journalists working for us full-time as well, part-time, sorry, for content. And you know, I feel like And that's, by the way, that's very typical for Latin America. But there are some countries like Brazil and probably Argentina especially, where you just try not to hire too many people because there are so many legal cases. And it's just a difficult market to, you know, from the human resources standpoint. Until 2020, I believe, sometime at the beginning of 2020, Brazil was concentrating 90% of all the legal cases in the workplace. So basically, imagine you fire an employee and the employee sues you. It's like it's a basic thing here. I don't know why they do it. But then, of course, you know, things got a little bit better with the new law. And I feel like it's improving. But yeah, it's challenging, you know.
Yeah, but really that the marketing that you did in the beginning and having that be your background, I think for a network effect business where you're trying to build supply, build demand, manage that kind of network liquidity, it sounds like that's really the perfect background for the founder to have in that type of a business. And that even as you start to hire new people in there, I've got to assume like on the scaling side that kind of keeping everyone on the same page and pulling in the same direction, obviously you have to have trust in turning some of that over, but where have you found some of the challenges in kind of building out the organization? And is it really just that small group of marketers that thinks about network liquidity and growth, or is there kind of a broader perspective on growth across the company and everyone kind of understands their part and contributes it to it in some way?
Right. No, so I think that the growth mentality is a company culture, right? So I think that everybody understands from the calls we're having, et cetera, what you really have to do here at Flapper, what are the values. Everybody contributes to many things. You know, if you work in a private aviation, which is such a complex sector, you also need to be fairly, you know, intelligent in a way that you need to learn what are the airplanes, what do they offer. People can ask you anything from, you know, cargo to ambulance flights. So my team is being trained every single week. We have an alignment call when we discuss, you know, what we learned, etc. To your second point, look, I think that if there is one thing that I really learned doing well in the last few years is hiring people. And for some reason, I don't know, maybe because I just became so good at it, but almost all my key employees right now, they came organically to Flapper. They were following it on LinkedIn. They saw that we are onto something. And they were like, Paul, I love your business. I would love to join the team. And that was the case for almost every single person that joined once we, as co-founders, you know, set up a company. It is still challenging, right? I'm not saying that it was easy, but and probably it's more challenging to actually maintain the team than to hire. And you have two types of sort of profiles for founders. You have more of like creators and you have management guys, right? And I'm probably into both, which is good because I don't mind creating, but I also don't mind managing people. So yeah, I think that, you know, it's never easy, right? Think about it, right? I mean, it's still, we work mostly with emerging markets. But I feel like, we manage it quite well. I remember crazy times at Rocket Internet where, you know, they would ask us, hey, let's hire 500 people tomorrow. And it was like, no, we cannot hire 500 people. You know, no, we have to hire 500 people. That's Rocket Internet mentality, you know, so aggressive. And so we had to learn a lot about hiring. I think we had 1,300 employees in Easy Taxi, right, at Easy Taxi. So yeah, lots of learnings.
I hadn't realized that Easy Taxi was a Rocket Internet company. That's a good background to have. I actually, when I was working with Eventbrite, that was also kind of pre Rocket Internet, but the Samwar brothers, and so I kind of followed the Rocket Internet journey from pretty early on, and was I think it's a, even though a lot of it's kind of a fast follower mentality there, the execution is amazing and the aggressiveness, and that's a good background to have.
Yeah, we learned a lot with Oliver Sommer. He was just crazy about execution. You know, he once did like he went to visit 3 countries in 3 days, and he was just literally landing, visiting the country manager, telling everything he's doing wrong and going to another country. So I was like, gosh, if he can do it, I can do it too. So recently I did my travel to 8 countries in 10 days, I think. I came back a little bit sick because my body didn't manage to yep. sort of survive this trip. But yeah, he has been a great mentor in a way.
One thing it's so interesting, you know, ultimately word of mouth is really the driver, but what's the path that gets people there? What is the path a new customer, you know, how does someone discover Flapper? How do they become a raving fan? How do they become that referrer and user of the service over and over again?
Right. You know, we are a mobile app. That's our main distribution channel. So people would probably just look for apps. And if they hear about Flapper, they're probably going to go to iTunes and Play Store and download it. But, you know, one thing that I've noticed in the last few years is that some of the keywords which did not appear on Google in the past, such as short executive flight, yeah, right? They start popping up on Google as well because people are just looking for alternatives to commercial aviation during the pandemic. So I would say that organic discovery is very important. That's why you want to appear everywhere. We want to have articles. We want to explain things, right? And of course, you know, you have those social networks these days. And I feel like private aviation is just made for Instagram, or Instagram is made for private aviation. So we post a lot. We do lots of campaigns with influencers, and eventually people are going to discover this content and you know, download an app.
Great. So yeah, Ethan, you want to take that last question? The question we always like to ask?
Yeah, we always like to ask, what do you feel like you understand about growth now that maybe you didn't understand a couple of years ago? What'd you learn?
Oh, gosh. I think you always learn. But yeah, like I feel like in the past, I was just crazy about reporting, you know, and I wanted to track everything and report everything. And today, I would say that if I'm sure that something works, I'm not even gonna you know, measure it or report it. I'm just going to make a campaign because I know that it will give me a good result. Just as an idea, we used to track performance of every single influencer campaign. Right now, I look at the guy, I was like, oh my God, this is my public. So I want him to post. I'm not even going to measure it. Of course, you know, my downloads are tracked and everything. But I feel like that in this crazy data-driven world of growth, sometimes we need to be a little bit more human as well and just trust in our creative, you know, skills and content strategy.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that because I remember one of the companies that I worked with where in the early days we could track everything because it was all kind of attributed to the efforts that we were doing. And then eventually momentum kicks in. You get word of mouth. You've got PR. You've got all these things that are much less trackable. And I remember my CEO kind of panicking, like we're losing control and having to have the conversation that this is a good thing. That means that the flywheel is turning to the point where it's beyond just the things we're doing. We need to understand the interrelationship there. But you know, when you graduate beyond purely attributable everything, that can often be a good thing. It's just you're gonna have to model more as opposed to have fully tracked attribution.
You know, I remember there was once a call between Rocket Internet and like they did calls basically with all the founders. So let's say 100 founders from different ventures and Oliver entering there and literally going like 5 minutes per company in 24 hours. Like the guy wouldn't sleep. And he was once asking the CMO, what is your CAC? And he was like, let me check. I was like, no, wait, you don't know what's your CAC. I have it jotted down here. No, you're fired. And he fired a guy during the call. It's just funny, you know, because that's exactly the type of, you know, obsession about the numbers that those guys had. That today I sort of want to avoid, you know, I understand the numbers, I know where they are leading, but the truth is you need to create good content and you need to do it in the right way. And numbers are not the only thing that will lead you there. You have to be creative. You have to give yourself some space, you know? So yeah, that's a funny episode.
Yeah. So I appreciate so much you telling your story to us. My big takeaways as I think about the full Flapper story is that, you know, you started with really a need in that market, but that you're getting the engine going was tough in the beginning. Everything from financing to just getting the ball rolling, but being really sophisticated with the geofencing and some of the things you were doing on targeting and building a big enough audience to do the lookalike audience and then to the point now where it feels like you're in the momentum play where you have enough success that the money is coming to you more aggressively. The team is coming to you more aggressively. The word of mouth is a huge factor in spinning things up. And that's cool. I mean, I think to a large degree, that's kind of classic marketplace dynamics, that they're really hard to start, but it's a really powerful engine when you can get there, particularly if they map to a market need that's big and important. So congratulations on all the success. It's really impressive where you've gotten to, and it'll be exciting to see where you take it from here. I don't know, Ethan, did you have any other big takeaways from the conversation?
It just, you know, I think, you know, you said you're biased as a marketer, but it sounds like you really started that marketing from this, with this idea that you have to build trust. And building trust in airplanes is not easy. But it was really, I think, a key learning for me is that you really used a lot of the tools like PR content to drive the word of mouth and to build sort of to help build that growth engine from the ground up. So really interesting stuff. And I really do appreciate you sharing the story with us.
Thank you, gentlemen. And I feel like our business is a little bit of a mission impossible and we managed to achieve this mission. So yeah, I'm very happy. I appreciate your kind comments. And hopefully, you know, all of this will be published one day in my next book, which I already said will be called The Immigrant, just to really sort of put it all in the context, because, you know, it's not easy to live abroad. It's my eighth country. Yeah, still, we managed to build interesting businesses. So there are lots of things we should share with the next generation.
Perfect. Well, congratulations again, and thanks so much for sharing your story. And for everyone tuning in, thanks for listening, and we'll be back with another episode soon.
Thanks for listening to the Breakout Growth Podcast. Please take a moment to leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. And while you're at it, subscribe so you never miss a show. Until next week.